Today is Thursday, December 13th, 2018. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik share on Parshas Vayigash.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I wish I had that yet.
Boy, likewise. It's a pleasure.
No, it really is. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure today.
Anyway, we're going to be davening tomorrow, just a couple of minutes after the class. In case you don't know it, we're Fleisher. And next week we're going to be Milchik, just so you know.
Next week there's no shear.
There's no shear next week. So next week is not Milchik, it's Parv.
In two weeks. In 2 weeks it's Milchik, huh?
Yeah. 2 weeks is
no. Okay.
We're on?
In two weeks.
Okay.
And then New Year's, right?
Yeah. The class in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Milchik. Fitness wants milk.
Right.
Okay. Bring your pizza.
I'll take it. I'll eat it. I don't just give it.
So when you're done with your meal, please, take your plates and throw them out. Clean off the tables. Leave the tablecloths on, if you'd be so kind. I'd like to just take the opportunity to... wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos, and thank you all of you for coming today.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. This week is.
If you could silence your phones, that would be great.
This week is Parshas Vayigash, and Yosef is told about his father, Yaakov is told that Yosef wants to, that Yosef is alive, and he's a king in Egypt, and he decides to undertake the trip to Egypt. Yosef sends Agolos wagons for him, to take him there, and they reach Beersheba, and in Beersheba, he gives korbanos, they say, with shlomim to God, and then God appears to him, and he says, don't be scared to go down to Mitzrayim, and ultimately, that you will be returned after he dies, to Eretz Canaan, to the Maris of Machpelah, and all that. But the interesting, when he gives the korbanos, when he gives the sacrifices, so it says, Vayisa Yisrael, v'chol asher lo, Yisrael went, and all that's with him, his whole camp, Vayavo Beersheva, he went to Beersheva, Vayizbach zvachim lalakei aviv Yitzchak. He gave sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And all of the commentaries are somewhat troubled, starting with Rashi down. Why did it say that he gave korbanos to the God of his father Isaac? Either he gave korbanos, the question manifests itself in two different ways, depending which commentary you look. Or, why didn't he say to the God of Abraham? Because Abraham is the first one to establish the relationship with God. So why did he say to the God of Isaac? So Rashi says a strange thing, and he said, a person is required more to give respect and regard to his father than to his grandfather. Leficha tola b'yitzak below b'avram. Okay, but what do you mean that the Torah writes he gave to the God of his father Isaac? How do we see here, what does it have to do with showing more respect for the father? That's the way the Torah phrases it. You know, it's very difficult. And other explanations are given. But I want to offer two explanations that I don't. Well, the Sforna gives a very interesting explanation. The Sforna said, because when Yitzchak wanted to go down to Egypt, God said to him, "Al terid Mitzrayim, do not go down to Egypt. Gur baretz hazoh, stay here in the land." So there is, so that's why, in a sense, he had to get special permission. He had to get special permission from God to leave Eretz Yisrael. He had to get special permission from God to leave Eretz Yisrael and to go down to Egypt. Now, so really there are two basic questions. In other words, what is this based on? The facts are that the Avos had to observe the Torah. Now, the truth is, as far as going down to Egypt is concerned, this is the first time. But there was a double problem, just leaving Eretz Yisrael. Now, this is not the first time. This is not the first time that he leaves. He left previously also. Yaakov went to Laban's house. So we see that he does leave Eretz Yisrael. And it's true, Al Teir Mitzrayim, and when God talked to Yitzchak, he said two things to him. Don't go down to Egypt, and live in Eretz Yisrael. So God not only told him not to go down to Egypt, he told him to stay in Eretz Yisrael. So there was a double commandment involved, and we know that he went out beforehand. So if he needed special permission, so how did he go out before it? So you could suggest that he got special permission. he got special permission when he had that dream of the ladder, Sulam Mutzavatz, the Rosh Makiyah Shemaima. But he didn't ask for permission. God appeared to him. So why is it that here he's asking for permission, and there he didn't ask for permission? So we have to understand that all right. We have to understand the Sforna. And then I have my own teretz. If we have time, I'll go into it. Now, I want to discuss something that I have discussed a number of times before. With the famous questions that everybody asks, how was Yaakov able to marry two sisters? After all, the Gemara says that the Avos, the patriarchs, observed the 613 mitzvahs. Personally, I think that there is a machlokas on that in the Gemara. Okay, but that's not the simple reading of the Gemara. So, I think, although there are people who thought that it almost borders in heresy, that the Rambam Paskins like the opinion that they didn't observe all 613 mitzvos. It was an evolutionary process in terms of the mitzvos the Avos observed. Avram observed certain mitzvahs, Yitzchak observed certain mitzvahs, Yaakov observed certain mitzvahs. It wasn't, and not that the Rambam Chas V'Shalom is going against the Gemara, but he thought that it was a matter of dispute among the Chachmei HaGemara, among the Amorayim and the Gemara. However, I want to, but it's assumed, and there's clearly an opinion that way, that the Avos, the patriarchs, observed all the mitzvahs of the Torah. So the question is, how could Yaakov have married two sisters? And then another question that is asked, if the Avos, the patriarchs, observed all the mitzvahs of the Torah, why did Avram wait? And this is not such a major question. Why did Avram wait to get a command from God about bris milah, about circumcision, when he was 99 years old? Why didn't he observe that mitzvah beforehand? Okay. Now, what I think is, I mentioned that my great grandfather Reb Chaim used to say, he explained a certain Rambam, and I'm not going to go into all the details of that Rambam, but he said that there was a difference between Yitzchak and Yishmael on one hand, and Yaakov and Esav on the other hand. And I mentioned this before. Yitzchak and Yishmael was disqualified at birth from being the successor of Avraham Avinu. He was disqualified at birth. Ki v'Yitzchak yikara l'chazara. Also, you see that the main wife certainly was Sarah, and Yishmael was not the child of Sarah's. So, ki v'Yitzchak yikara l'chazara, from Yitzchak will be your descendants. But then, from Yitzchak, within Yitzchak, we'll get into that in a second. Okay, from Yitzchak will be your descendants. But then, the Reb Chaim says, however, when it comes to Yaakov and Esav, each of them had the chance to be the successor, but only one of them could be the successor. Ki v'Yitzchak v'lo kol Yitzchak. Within Yitzchak will be your descendants, from Yitzchak will be your descendants, but not all of Yitzchak will be your descendants. So, in a certain sense, Esav had the chance to be the successor, to Avram Avinu and Yitzchak. But ultimately, he sold his Bechora and he acted in a manner unbefitting someone becoming the successor to Avram Avinu. And ultimately, Yitzchak says to Yaakov, Yitain lecha as birchas Avram, you should get the blessings of Avram. So in a sense, Yaakov is appointed by Yitzchak as the successor. He's appointed by Yitzchak as the successor. But the question is, at what point does he become the successor? At what point does he become the successor to, and by the way, and this is interesting, the Gemara in Dushan tells us that Esav Yisrael Mumer Havei. Esav was halachically considered a Jew. You see that he wasn't disqualified at birth. If he was not disqualified at birth, he's obviously a Jew. But his descendants are not to be considered Jewish. Only those who succeed who the one who is the successor to Avram and Yitzchak, his descendants will be Jewish. But Esav himself was halachically, Jewish. But he couldn't be the successor. Now, the question is, at what point does Yaakov become the successor? Now, the Torah tells us that Yaakov, that Yaakov's name is changed to Yisrael. What is, and we know that Avram's name was changed from Avram to Avraham. Yitzchak's name is not changed. Why? Now, names, I always mention, names represent two things. Either new identity. I know somebody who maximized on her credit cards, and she wanted to clear up her reputation, so she went out of the country and came back with a new identity. So, it's a new person. A new name, a new identity, a new person. So, a name means a new identity, a new name. But a name also, it was given when someone got a promotion. Yosef, when he became assistant of king, last week, Sedra. He's called Sofnas Paneach. It was tradition in the Roman Empire, in the ancient empires, when somebody was appointed emperor or king, today, Lahavdil infinite Havdalos, so he gets a new name, but it's not a rejection. The difference is when it's a change of identity. When it's a change of identity, it's a rejection of the old name. When it's a name given because of a promotion, because of a higher position, so then it's not. It's not a rejection of the former name. Avram, once he gets the name Avraham, you're not allowed to call him Avram. Gemara in Bracha says, "Kol akore la'Avraham Avram over basay, over below sasa." You're not allowed. Why? Because by Avram, it wasn't just a promotion. It was a new identity. Once Gershon is Gayer Kekaden Shanola Dami. If we say he went through conversion, and even if he didn't go through conversion, the fact that he became a Jew gave him a new identity. So it's a rejection of his old identity. However, Yaakov was not a rejection. It was just Yitzchak was born an Av of Klal Yisrael. He doesn't need a name change. He doesn't have conversion. He doesn't have. He's not promoted because he was born being a patriarch of the Jewish people. Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov, on the other hand, he was born a Jew, just as Esav was born a Jew. But Yaakov is promoted to be a patriarch of the Jewish people. Because of that, he gets an additional name. That name is Yisrael. Now, what does the name Yisrael mean? So Torah says, Kisarisim Ohim v'manash v'tuchal. So, the way we learned it, the way Rashi explains it, you struggled, you fought, im anoshim, with men, and with malachim, with angels, vatuchal, and you were successful. However, Targum Unculus explains it different. Targum Unculus says, ki sarisa, you became a sar, an officer. Rav Revaya is the Aramaic word that the Unculus used. Rav Raya, you became an officer. The name Yisrael denotes position. Before you came an officer, before God and with people, and you were successful. So God recognizes Avram, Yaakov, as the patriarch of Jerusalem. The Malach gives him the name beforehand, but he gets the name just as he's when he re-enters Eretz Yisrael from his trip. He becomes at that point the father Beiskel. So he becomes a patriarch. He becomes a patriarch. He was appointed beforehand. He was appointed when he went to Lavan's house. But you know, David is anointed king of Israel, but he was limited in his status as king so long as Saul was alive. In regard to certain things, he had to be treated like king. In regard to other things, he wasn't treated like king. He might have been melech, but he didn't have malchus. The Torah says about there's a special mitzvah that the king writes a sefer Torah, v'haya kishifto al kisei mamlachto, when he sits on his throne. That means when he has malchus. But when he doesn't have malchus, when he's not a full king yet, he didn't have the special obligation of writing a sefer Torah. But other halachas did apply to him. He's sort of in an in-between state. He's a king without kingdom. He's a king and not a ruler. A king is a ruler. A ruler is not necessarily a king, but a king is a ruler. And so at this point, Yaakov is appointed as an av of Klal Yisrael earlier on, but he doesn't assume that role until he returns back to Eretz Yisrael and he gets the name. By God, when God says, your name is Yisrael, God appoints him as a tsar, as an officer. So, and that was a base kill. The Malach did it beforehand, but he becomes a full patriarch of the Jewish people at that point. Now we can understand. He says the Avos observed the 613 mitzvahs. There is an assumption that's made, and because of that, they ask all kinds of questions. How do we find that this one of the Shvatim didn't observe the 613 mitzvahs? This one didn't observe it. It doesn't say that the Jewish people in Egypt observed the 613 mitzvahs. It doesn't say that the Jewish people in Canaan observed the 613 mitzvahs. It says that the Avos, the patriarchs, observed it. Yaakov did not feel that obligation of observing the 613 mitzvahs until, of all the 613 mitzvahs, obviously some of the mitzvahs he kept, but he did not feel the obligation. He preserved the 613 mitzvahs. The Taryag mitzvahs, Shamarti, I watched over them. I persevered that the Taryag mitzvahs should not be forgotten. But the obligation as a patriarch to observe the 613 mitzvahs, that he didn't have until he returned, till God gave him the name Yisrael, which means Tsar, which means Raviraya, which means an officer. It denotes a promotion. And I think with this we can understand Yaakov, when he made his first trip of outside Eretz Yisrael, he was not yet an av of Klal Yisrael. Was not in the fullest sense. He was not a patriarch, a full patriarch of the Jewish people. It was still within the reign of Yitzchak. Yitzchak was in a sense, the main patriarch at that point. It was sort of like the status of David and Shaul. David did not, it was still within the reign of David, the reign of Yitzchak. But when Yaakov comes back, then he assumes that role of being the leader of the Jewish people of future generations, of being the patriarch. So beforehand, he didn't need special permission to leave Eretz Yisrael. But at this point, he felt just as God told his father Isaac, you can't leave. Maybe he shouldn't leave, because at this point, he was a patriarch. That he shouldn't go down to Egypt. At this point, he shouldn't go down to Egypt also. So he had to give zvachim. He had to give karbanos. He had to give karbanos to that. And that's how Yaakov was able to marry two sisters. He was able to marry two sisters because at that time, when he married them, he was not yet a patriarch of the Jewish people. So, in the fullest sense. Now, what I think there is another possible teretz that could be given. And that is, when it comes to karbanos, there is the external karban, but the external karban is just a symbol of giving oneself over. I mentioned what the Alshich says. Why is it that God accepted the sacrifices of Hevel and rejected the sacrifices of Cain? Cain just gave the external sacrifice. The Hevel Hevi Gamhu Mekorasono. He reads into the words, literally it means, and Hevel also brought a sacrifice from his cattle, from his sheep, whatever. Hevel Hevi Gamhu. But Hevel brought himself together with it. It was just a symbol. God doesn't need the carbon. We don't feed God. And I mentioned till the Akedah, my uncle said, and I explained it at length, I don't want to go into it now, Avram did not give karbanos. He made mizbechos. He made altars. But he didn't put an animal sacrifice on it. Why didn't he put an animal sacrifice on it? So I mentioned that we find that Adam Arishon, this is the question everybody asks. Adam Arishon gave sacrifices. They asked it against the Rambam, because the Rambam says that Karbanos is really not the ideal form of service. It's only later on that it became necessary. So the question is, Adam Arishon gave sacrifices. Noach gave sacrifices. The answer is, why is Karbanos, what is the problem with Karbanos? That the Rambam says it's not the ideal form of sacrifices. Nevertheless, the Torah imposed it upon us because there was a special need. Why? Why is it not the ideal form? Because giving sacrifices has this impression of feeding God. Of feeding God. And that's an idolatrous perspective. Until after Noah gave his carbon, man was not allowed to eat meat. So the giving of the carbon did not have that impact of giving, of feeding God, chas v'shalom. But Avraham made mizbechos. What did he put on mizbech? He came, gave himself over. He went over to the Mizbeach. He was saying, it's not the sacrifice. This was his response to the idolatrous practices of those days. You have to give yourself over to God. Not an animal sacrifice. But then, what was the purpose of the Akedah? The purpose of the Akedah was that it represented the point that the animal sacrifice is really in place of man. That the real sacrifice is giving yourself over to God. And who symbolized that? Yitzchak. Yitzchak was put on the Akedah. That's what Yaakov wanted to let God know, so to say. We wanted to show God. Of course, God knew. I should have used that expression. God knew. But Yaakov, Elokei, the God of his father Isaac. Because Yitzchak was the symbol of the idea of, I am the sacrifice. I am the one that's being given over to God. So, Avraham is the one who put Yitzchak in the Akedah, but who's the one that, in a sense, was being given over to God? That was Yitzchak. So that's why when he gave the Karban, it was the Akedah of Yitzchak. It was the God of his father, the God of his father Yitzchak. Okay, we'll leave it here.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay.
We are not meeting, next week, but the week after.
Pizza.
We'll be milking. And we'll be davening in about 2 minutes. Thank you.